Welcome to the Beer Jerk Podcast. I'm Luke.
And I'm Matt.
And this week we're going to be chatting about beer news. If you don't know, Beer Jerk is, well, it's us, and Beer Jerk is a shop on the internet. What are we going to drink this week, Matt?
So this week we've got a bunch of good stuff to talk about. First off, we're going to crack into a new beer.
Oh, Paul.
This one is from Canyon Brewing down in Queenstown, but we'll be talking about that a little later. What have you been drinking this week, Luke?
I didn't have many beers in this weekend, and it was, despite owning a beer shop, I was pretty lacking, and I couldn't be arsed walking up the road to the shop, so I raided my cellar. By cellar, I mean about 8 bottles, which is in the bottom of my cupboard, and cracked open the 500 and Garage Project.
Ooh, that's their 500th brew, wasn't it? The 500th Guile?
Exactly. So that caused quite a bit of fuss when that was released 3-4 years ago.
Yeah, I'm not sure I ever actually tried it. What style is it?
Oh, sorry.
You could have shared.
I did buy a few bottles as well, but that was the last one. 500 and Garage Project was a barley wine. So beautiful, traditional 14% barley wine aged in bourbon barrels.
Is it American or English style?
English. It was not especially hoppy. Maybe it was more hoppy when it was fresh, but I'm pretty sure it was Styrian Goldings. It was pretty trad English.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the interesting things about barley wine, I think. There's a bit of confusion there between English and American. I know there was a bit of debate around McLeod's barley wine when that came out, and people are used to that more fruitcakey English style, and having something that kind of bitter and aggressive like an American one caused a bit of upset.
Yeah, I think they're two very different beer styles, English barley wine and American barley wine. American's almost like a triple IPA almost.
Yeah, well, when Epic released their XXL, they released as a quadruple IPA, and it immediately drew comparisons to American barley wines because it's got that, as well as having that rich, heavy malt load, kind of toffee and molasses sweetness, it's heavily hopped with some really aggressive bitterness, which the English ones traditionally aren't, and yeah, you don't get that same level of sweetness.
Well, I think American barley wines can be divisive because it's melding two opposing types of flavour. You've got the rounded sweetness of the body, and then you've got a quite an aggressive bitterness often, which probably a lot of people might not like.
Yeah.
But anyway, 500, beautiful, and just the ageing has done lovely things to it. It's sort of just melded the flavours and made them more complex and interesting. Just the perfect TV beer to drink 650 ml of over the course of an evening while watching a good film.
Well, if you're running out of beer, you only need one of them.
Yeah, exactly. What have you been drinking?
The other barrel-aged beer that we shared last week was the 8 Wide Mando Amando.
Very nice beer.
Yeah, barrel-aged Mandarin Sour from 8 Wide. And it was lovely. It's not as tart and punchy as we were expecting.
I was expecting it to be like the recent Hill Farmstead beers, or just like, yeah, traditional Fuda beer, or sort of lambic style, where it is an in-your-face bitterness. But it was, yeah, much more restrained in. Sorry, I said bitterness. I meant sourness. It was much more restrained in sourness than I was expecting.
Yeah, but it drank almost kind of like a wild saison. Had this beautiful kind of delicate Brett funk to it. The Mandarin came in as more of a kind of a pithy Mandarin rather than that kind of juicy acidic hit that I was expecting. Yeah, kind of more playing with that kind of waxy kind of Mandarin pith, almost more of the aroma that you get from a Mandarin than the actual juice and flesh. But yeah, just some beautiful kind of wild funky saison notes. I think that's going to age out really nicely.
Yeah, just delicate, really quaffable considering it was 7.2.
yeah, so just a really nice refined example of a barrel-aged sour.
And from 8 Wide, just one of the most incredible breweries in general, but especially for all their wild ferment and barrel stuff. It's a seriously, seriously impressive program they've got going up there in Warkworth.
Yeah, definitely. And from seriously impressive stuff to my homebrew. Yeah, I've been on a bit of a budget lately, so just drinking what I've been making at home. I made a Vienna Lager to celebrate the birth of my daughter.
That was good.
Yeah, and it was sitting in a keg for quite a while I had to change my gas bottle and stuff like that. And so it had a nice long lagering time. So that's tasting pretty good. I put a bit too much specialty malt in it, so it's a bit sweeter than I'd like, so it doesn't come off as clean as I wanted, but it just drinks a bit more like a dry English bitter. With that kind of a bit more sweetness, but yeah, I can do better, but we'll see how the next one goes.
Yeah, I think that's just the life of, well, every creative person, whether a chef, a cocktail expert, a brewer, everyone is their own harshest critic and is always looking at the next thing.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever made a beer I was fully satisfied with, so.
Yeah, apart from maybe Satan, Satan, Satan.
Maybe.
This.
Do we have to hit our Satan, Satan, Satan quota and mention it every episode?
And also, I'm joking there. There's definitely room for improvement on that one. If we ever summoned our Dark Lord and brewed it again.
Yeah.
We're talking of homebrewing. The book of the week. Let's do DIY Dog. Brewdog are probably one of the most hated breweries around these days. There's a lot of hate for Brewdog.
Well, I think we see a lot more hate for Brewdog than most people because we're in all the English kind of craft beer members groups, like the Beer Joke members group that we have here. But around English beer, there's the UK Craft Beer Forum, UK Supermarket Craft Beer Forum, and a couple of others over there where they do get quite a lot of flack. And being a supermarket brand, and like they've recently reduced the ABV on Elvis juice, their grapefruit IPA, and there is a bit of backlash for sure.
Yeah, anyway, Elvis juice.
All right, we'll write that one down for later.
We need to erase that from the podcast. No one can copy that. We're going to release Elvis juice, which would be a solid grapefruit IPA that does not have reduced ABV. So, and also I log into Twitter about once a week. So that's the...
Well, everyone's angry on Twitter.
Yeah, pit of despair. People are so upset on Twitter. But anyway, lots of people hate Brewdog. But they released a book called DIY Dog, like 6 years ago maybe. And I think they've updated it since then. They just released all of their recipes in homebrew 20 litre format size. Which is, I mean, that's sort of what we're into. I just like the idea of being just generous and open, and the same as chefs can write cookbooks. You don't need to keep secrets, because if you're trying to brew a wheat beer, you can have the recipe from Erdinger or Wienstefaner. It's not going to taste the same as their wheat beer.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many things that go into it. I mean, apart from just the quality of the equipment, the quality of the ingredients, the skill of the brewer, you've got stuff like fermenter geometry, and there's all sorts of things that go into making beer from a particular beer brewery unique. And so, yeah, the idea that someone's going to see the recipe for Punk IPA and suddenly have a multi-million dollar brewery off the back of it is not... Not that realistic, really.
But for any homebrewers listening, it's worth checking out. You can just download the PDF for free online from, I think it's on the Brewdog website, or you'll find it. And it's also a nice sort of starting point. You know, if you want to make a milk stout or a red IPA, you can get a bit of a base recipe there and then tinker.
Well, do you reckon they have the original Elvis juice recipe in there?
Yep, but again, I'm going to have to erase this from the podcast because we can't let everyone know that we've just completely copied Elvis juice and original Elvis juice and called it Elvis juice.
No one will ever know.
Well, then no one listens to this podcast, so the secret's probably safe. I won't have to edit it out.
James Watt has got his earbuds in. He's getting a lawsuit ready.
Always listening. What next?
So my recommendation for this week is another Netflix special. That's two in a row for me, but I'll try and deviate next week. This one is a bit different, though. It's Bo Burnham's comedy special, Inside. It's a really interesting show that he's put together, and it's a real reflection of the times that we're living in, particularly in America at the moment, because it's a one-man show that is written, directed, lit, shot, edited, produced, everything by Bo Burnham in his living room. And it's part musical. He's a musical comedian, so he does a lot of fun songs and stuff like that. But it's part musical comedy, part stand-up, but also kind of part a kind of depressing and troubling introspective meander through the experience of living by yourself in lockdown. And I think it's known that a lot of comedians struggle with mental health issues, and there's some quite kind of a few kind of honest and confronting moments in there that really kind of have a kind of dark, interesting edge, as well as some fantastic comedy and some fun, jaunty musical numbers.
Sounds like a full package.
Yeah, it's he's a really interesting guy. If you don't have time for a full comedy special, you can check out some of his stuff on YouTube. There's one called Pandering, where he's making fun of modern millionaire country music singers, talking about their red pickup and their blue jeans. And it's like, yeah, your boots cost $1 million, mate. you're not a down-home country boy. And so there's a song about that. And then there's an interesting one called Art is Dead, which he performs in a comedian green room, which is just another kind of weird, introspective, self-reflective song, but kind of funny and dark and interesting at the same time.
Well, this is bloody delicious, Matt.
Yeah, so we're moving on to our beer of the week. This is from Canyon Brewing down in Queenstown, and it's a collaboration with a local Queenstown restaurant called The Blue Door, and it is a fresh hot pineapple daiquiri hazy.
I was just going to chat with Kit, who's he's been at Canyon for a couple of years, but he's recently become the head brewer in the last few weeks, about this beer. This is the first in their cocktail series, and I think they're going to be doing a few collaborations with Blue Door that seems like a brilliant cocktail bar. Have you been?
I haven't, but you were saying there was something to do with the cocktail waiter or the head cocktail maker at the Blue Door was involved?
Yep, the Blue Door in Queenstown. They've got a load of hop vines just growing in the backyard.
Oh, cool.
The cocktail waiter, Ross, gave Kit a call and told him about these hops and asked if he wanted to brew with them. And Kit was like, oh yeah, there might be a few hops for me to do a homebrew type kit brew with. And he turned up and it was just an entire canopy of hops, and he harvested like 20 kilos of them.
Oh, fantastic.
So they were chatting about every year Ross will take a bunch of hops and infuse them with plantation rum. And each year he does different cocktails. So last year he'd made a sort of pineapple daiquiri cocktail with this infused rum. So they were chatting about whether they could make a beer that brings that to mind. This is a beer that's got no adjuncts in it, but it's made with, so these fresh hops, so Kit reckons they're Taihiki. Although they're not 100% sure because they don't know who planted them or anything, but yeah, they look and smell like Taihiki.
For people who have a bit of knowledge about hops, Taihiki is the new name for New Zealand Cascade, yep, which is kind of the classic hop that kicked off the craft beer movement over in the States with stuff like Sierra Nevada Pale Ale. But the New Zealand cultivar deviated quite a bit, and so they've renamed it to Taihiki in 3, 4, 5 years ago or something?
Yeah, pretty recently. And yeah, that is interesting how you can just take a hop plant and plant it somewhere else in the world and give it a whole different name. Like Styrian Goldings that I mentioned earlier, they're fuggles that are just grown in Eastern Europe.
Yeah, well, it's
same stuff.
I mean, it's what, it's like the same thing you see in wine. It's terroir actually has a huge impact on the hops, the environment that it's grown in, the type of soil, the amount of sunlight it receives, and over the years, those plants go through generations, and you see generational change, and that's how, what's this, evolution, right? That's how
stuff changes.
Works, yeah,
like those finches. So this is made with a load of the hops grown in the backyard of the bar, and also it's got a good amount of dried, pelletized, sort of normal hops in there. Not normal, but hops that have been dried and pelletized in the way that we usually use hops in beers. So it's got loads of Sabro, Galaxy, and Mott.
That's a good hop lineup.
Yeah, so you can taste the Sabro, right? Really quite coconutty to me.
Yeah, I've never actually picked up that coconut note a huge amount in Sabro. Mm. I get a kind of, I find it more herbal. I find it quite reminiscent of Sriracha Ace, the very strange Japanese hop. It does have a bit of that tropical aspect as well, but it does kind of meld well with that kind of tropical hop pineapple-y character that you're going for. Kind of that, could be kind of pina colada-esque, I guess.
I remember when craft beer started becoming a thing, and I was a student and working part-time in a traditional real ale pub in Nottingham called the Keen's Head. And I remember one day the landlady rolled in a keg of Punk IPA.
Yeah.
And I said, what's that? And she said, oh, it's these couple of Scottish lads that are doing these American, like, super hoppy weird beers. So I thought I'd give it a go. And around that time, there's, oh, the debate still rages between English real ale and craft beer, and
It's a whole other category back in the UK, which you don't really see here, except maybe at like Galbraith's and Moon Underwater and LBQ and a couple of little holdouts.
It's so tiny that it almost doesn't exist in the minds of most New Zealand drinkers. So in New Zealand, we have shit beer and we have craft beer, basically.
Yeah.
Whereas in England, there's shit beer, there's craft beer, and there's also real ale.
Well, it's the kind of thing that exists in any of those, it's the old world countries where they have those beer traditions dating back hundreds of years.
Mm.
So in Germany, you've got your Bavarian lagers and wheat beers and that kind of stuff. In Germany,
yeah.
In Belgium, you've got your Trappist ales and lambics. And in the UK, you've got real ale. So there's that old tradition that runs alongside the new revolution of craft beer.
Well, as part of these arguments about which is better, of course, they're all great in their own way. One was that with craft beer, people just chuck in random ingredients like chocolate or grapefruit.
I would never do something like that.
Whereas in real ale, that wouldn't happen, and that would be as alien as it would be to have a Sauvignon Blanc and chuck in a load of gooseberries. A winemaker would not do that. So this is quite an interesting beer, that it actually doesn't have any pineapple or any coconut or any adjuncts. Kit's done a bloody good job at pulling together the hint of all those flavours just using hops.
Yeah, well, it's good. And I guess it's worth noting on a little bit about fresh hop beers. Now, it's pretty unusual to see fresh hop beers this late in the year.
Mm.
Mostly they come out kind of mid-April, and then they're gone.
Some even earlier, yeah.
Yeah, some earlier. But being so far south, with a different climate, the hops in Queenstown are actually harvested a lot later. Mm. So we're seeing a few more hop farms releasing on different schedules. Some are coming earlier, some are coming a lot later. I think there's Kotari Hops down in Christchurch who are doing some stuff. And so we are seeing that season spread out as people like Sawmill in Northland released their beers quite early,
yeah,
and this one coming out relatively late. But with fresh hops, you see that you get some unique characters coming through. There's a bit often more of a herbal note to them, and it's really exciting that every year when they come out, and you get to get beers with a unique hop expression that kind of you rarely see at other times. But they can be pretty divisive.
It's pretty hard work brewing with fresh hops.
Oh, it's an absolute pain in the ass, yeah.
It's inefficient, it's expensive, it's a pain in the ass.
You've got brewers chartering planes, like taking overnight trips in refrigerated trucks, all sorts of stuff just to get the hops to the beer as quickly as possible.
I don't think any brewers do it to make money. It's just it's for the pure joy of it and for the flavour, yeah. And that's what good beer's all about. That's what gets me excited.
Yeah, it is pretty exciting. So one of my great regrets and shames in beer is that I have never seen fresh hops.
Mm.
I have had one carrier bag full of fresh hops that I brewed with one year, but I've never been to the hop gardens. I've never been on a fresh hop brew day. I've never got to do all those shots where you dig your face into a load of fresh hop cones. So that's definitely high on my to-do list.
Plan for next year?
Yeah, I think so. Maybe a trip to Nelson.
Trips in Elson, yeah. Maybe a collaboration fresh hop brew down there for Small Gods.
We can't plan more beers right now.
Yeah, we've got a few Small Gods plans in the works. One of which we're about to step into a meeting with an amazing person who I met in an underground nightclub on K Road in the small hours of Saturday morning.
Yeah, well, some interesting fun plans there, but nothing set in stone yet. So we'll see what that looks like.
See what happens. Well, talking of weird ingredients, Matt, Gabs, that happens, well, it happened once in Auckland?
Has it just been here the once?
Yeah, because last year it was cancelled.
Yeah.
Maybe it's happened twice. Gabs is the Great Australian Beer Spectacular. Tap, because that's a pun in the word spectacular.
It is a pun, yes.
Yep. Big beer festival that happens in Melbourne's the biggest one by far, but also Sydney, also Brisbane.
Yeah, it's pretty major over there, and it's got actually quite a cool, unique vibe. They have container bars where each brewery who's taking part submits a single kind of outstanding festival beer, and those are all put together on one big bar, rather than every brewery having their own stand, though they do have separate stands for the individual breweries as well.
Yeah, so those are those big container bars, and the idea is that people try paddles and have little thimble shots of dozens of different beers and check them in on Untappd. And a lot of these beers are embargoed, so they're released at Gabs. And it's an all-round fun time, really. It's really light-hearted. They have music and dance performances and things. So that was scheduled to be happening at in about 3 weeks.
Yeah, on the 3rd of July was the original date.
And they've just postponed it.
Yeah, so they haven't announced when they've postponed it to, but with shipping delays, they have been having trouble getting all the Australian beers that are going to be on those container bars over to Auckland. Yeah, I think there's a few brewers who are being a bit put out by it, because they obviously brewed beer specifically for this event, and it's been embargoed for this event, and now I don't know what's happening with those embargoes, and I don't think the brewers know too much either.
Well, we've spoken to a couple of mates that run breweries who haven't been contacted by Gabs.
Yeah, which is pretty bad, really.
Yeah. So that is going to be a Saturday in our calendar that we need to fill. So maybe we'll do a little thing at the Fridge and Flagon.
Yeah, we'll see what we can do.
Get a few of those kegs.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, because as well as the postponement, we haven't actually seen that much hype around Gabs this year. I think with Beervana taking the lion's share of the beer festival hype in New Zealand, and the new beer festival that was put on at
I think it's
Arena?
Called Auckland Beer Festival, right?
The Auckland Beer Festival at Spark Arena. There wasn't as much hype around Gabs as I was expecting there to be.
Well, Gabs invested a major amount of money into promoting the first Gabs they did in Auckland. They had billboards everywhere, there were adverts on the backs of buses, which is just extremely expensive.
Yeah.
You know, it's an expensive project.
Yeah.
So we will wait and see, because it'll be a fun day out.
Yeah, definitely. The other news that's come out this week, there are some new rules that have come into place for beer and alcohol labelling in general, which have been proposed by Food Standards Australia and New Zealand. And that would be to bring in your nutritional information. As you see on your cereal box and your pasta or whatever it is, you've got your calories, your fat, your sodium, carbohydrate, protein, all those, the daily recommended serving sizes and all that information. There's a proposal to put that now onto alcohol labelling. And that is going to cause a lot of problems for a lot of small breweries if it comes into effect.
Well, the beers that we're into, and a lot of our favourite brewers, they just release so many seasonal one-off beers. And it's just, it's not a standard product like a Coca-Cola or like a Lion Red.
And that's the thing, like you're selling a box of Cheerios and it's the same every time. But there's a major question mark with these labelling changes as to how they're proposed to be implemented, because if every new beer requires lab testing, you need to wait on the results of those lab tests in order to print your labels or your cans or whatever it is, and then you have to get those produced. It's going to be hugely expensive, and B, cause a huge backlog between the time that the beer is brewed. Like, you've already got a delay with fermentation, so you've got to buy the ingredients, make the beer, wait for it to ferment, get the beer out of the tank, send it to a lab, wait for the results, get the labels send it to your designer, get the label produced. And by the time that label comes back, the beer's already going to be old. And so, as well as, with costs and time delays, there's potential for it to be a massive problem. There is an alternative which has been talked about, which is that they go for an algorithmically generated nutrition label, where you say, these are the ingredients, this is the process, this is the nutritional information that's going to come out the other side, which would undoubtedly be better, but it's still kind of a major issue for a lot of these small producers.
It's going to be a big expense. Lab testing isn't cheap. And yeah, those delays are pretty valid. A lot of the IPAs and very hop forward beers, they are best drunk fresh within a few months of being brewed in many cases. So if you need to add on 5 weeks at the very start of it, because you're having to wait for the tests and to get the label designed and printed. That's that's a real issue, and also for cash flow for brewers.
Yeah, well, the Independent Brewers Association over in Australia has worked out that it would cost $100 million over 10 years to implement the changes. I'm not entirely clear on what the breakdown of that is, which breweries are going to be bearing the brunt of it, but you know that it's not Lion, DB, Asahi, Independent Liquor that are going to be the ones who suffer the most from this. It's going to be small independent breweries who do regular seasonal releases, who do change their lineup, which is the bread and butter of their businesses, and who can't afford to be lab testing every batch that they produce.
Well, maybe a good way forward might be around simple batch sizes and volumes. So in the same way that I go to the corner shop and buy a sandwich, that does not come with an information sticker on it. Whereas if you went to the supermarket and bought a frozen pre-packaged lasagna, it would.
Yeah, I think that there's probably some sensible cutoffs to be had there. So if you make over 1 million litres a year of this product or something like that, because really it's if these changes come into effect, I suspect we will see a lot of breweries unable to comply and unable to continue trading.
Or severely restricted on the amount of brews at the release.
Yeah, absolutely. It's still in a submission phase at the moment. The IBA, Independent Brewers Association, and the Brewers Guild of New Zealand have been making submissions, and it's a pretty broad pushback from the industry. Even companies like Lion and DB, who have previously been kind of cagey and potentially advocating for changes like this with their... was it Beer the Beautiful Truth campaign? And that stuff that they did, they have at least publicly come out against it as well. So hopefully the big guys are on side too, which will mitigate that in future.
We'll be watching closely.
Definitely.
What's new in the chillers this week?
Well, we had a few new releases come in this week. As we talked about last week, Hop Nation has arrived. So we've got their range in the chillers at the moment. I was drinking the Buzz last night, which is a fantastic amber ale, won champion amber beer at the AIBA Awards.
Lovely.
Another one of those pairings that Epic have put out, which is West Coast IPA paired with New England IPA. So that's Hop Machine and Hazy Machine. They've been doing some really good stuff lately. I think Epic are on a really good roll right now, so it's...
Well, yeah, I reckon Hop Machine's going to be the pick out of those two, but I'm looking forward to pitting them against each other.
Yeah, well, it was like that with Player One and Player Two. We sold out the West Coast from them tend to go a lot faster than the New England's because they're probably the best West Coast IPA brewery in the country.
Probably.
Other than that, we've got a new American Pale Ale from McLeod's called The Falls. We've got a couple of new Garage Project Hazies, Hazy Days, which is the latest in their Hazy Pale Ale series, and Nope Rope, which they've put in a 330ml can.
That's a cool looking can.
Yeah, and I think it's Australian hopped. It's about Nope Rope being a snake, a danger noodle.
Yeah.
and then we have three new beers from Ground Up. Well, they're not actually new beers, but it's their first time ever in can. Ground Up are really ramping up their packaging. So we've got KPA, their Kiwi Pale Ale, Alpine Start, which is their oatmeal stout, and Punks in the Gym, which is their New Zealand IPA. So they're three that have been the staple of the Ground Up range since they launched, and it's really great to see those coming out in cans.
Fresh batches. KPA is a stunning pale ale. I'm looking forward to having a go on the new batch, but I'm sure Ollie will have done a great job on it again.
Yeah, and if Fifth Voyage is anything to go by, Alpine Start's going to be great as well.
Yeah.
And then we've got a couple of bits going on, new events this week. Those Hop Nation beers that I talked about are going to be on tap at the Fridge and Flagon this Friday. We've also got Miso Ra, who's a food truck coming in.
Yeah, so Miso Ra are just an awesome ramen food truck, but they're not bringing their food truck on Friday. They're going to be doing...
Dumplings, right?
Dumplings, yeah. But I'm not sure how you say it. Gyozo?
Gyoza?
Gyoza? Japanese fried dumplings that are going to be delicious.
Yeah. What also is going to be delicious is the pizza at the Cowabunga Pizza Party, which we're having. So it's the launch of Cowabunga Brewing.
A Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle themed brewery that has just opened up down the road from us in Morningside. And a couple of really lovely guys popped in a couple months ago with a few samples and They've just opened a tiny little brewery just kind of near the train station in Morningside.
300 litres, I think. So they're cranking out some fun little beers. They're launching with a couple of pale ales and a porter. The porter was really good, actually. We tried that.
Yep, lovely.
And they're going to be doing that with free pizza. So you can come down and check them out, see what they're all about. And also, I think, side note about Cowabunga, is as they're ramping up and just getting to their volumes, they do have some spare space on their kit. So if you want 300 litres of beer to drink at home, you can get in touch with them, and I think you might be able to if you want to split that with a few mates and get yourself a few kegs as they ramp up and looking to use up all that space. It might be an opportunity for you.
Sounds like a really good time.
Definitely.
That's about it from me.
And about it from me, I think.
Well, thanks for listening, everyone. We're amazed that people have tuned in. I had a little look at the data over the last couple of weeks, and there's bloody loads of you that are listening to us ramble on about beer. So thanks for taking the time to listen. Get in touch, let us know if there's any stuff you'd like us to be chatting about. As I say, we're going to be sprinkling in a few interviews here and there and talking about all kinds of topics. So just drop us a message. A great place to chat to us is on Facebook. We have a Beer Jerk members group called NZ Beer Jerks, and you'll find us on Instagram and other places. Probably not Beer Twitter. I hate Twitter.
Everyone hates Twitter.
Yeah, a Beer Jerk NZ.
Come find us there. And we've been getting some great feedback about how we're doing in our third week as podcasters. So
we're working on a theme tune for next week.
Working on a theme tune and some Foley work. Working on not talking over each other quite so much like I just did.
And not saying, but I hope you'll forgive us in our third podcast. And we'll see you next week.
Yeah.
Goodbye.